Live from the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, the only local show taking a principled stand on the issues of the day.
This is how it happens. It's the natural process of things.
The view of the entrenched is predictable, but it's also erroneous.
With Sean Secrets.
We have an addiction in this country, not only to government welfare and government handouts, but more fundamentally, to other people's money.
And Quaid.
Again, you're dancing with government.
This is the Morning Meeting.
You cannot continue to advocate for status quo when status quo has run the ship aground.
On Talk Radio 930, WTAD.
Lots of people around this time of year have complaints about allergy issues.
My
complaint is that I somehow have like smart allergies.
What?
I feel great all morning and then I walk into the studio and like my sinuses seize up and then I'm coughing and it's just, I don't know.
Are you implying that there's something in the studio here that...
Besides you.
Besides me or...
That I'm allergic to, yes.
Or Josh.
Yes.
One of
I
these,
don't think I'm allergic to Josh.
One of these plants in
he
here.
He sits far enough away from me. That I don't think producer Josh is a part of it. That or we've got, like, something else in the studio. Something that could get us in trouble.
I haven't changed my deodorant.
I'm just going to have to do what I do at home in order
have
to
you switched, no, but
to work through this.
Only
I'm
going
to have to self-medicate with alcohol. That's usually how I change
Ah, yes.
You know, just... The intelligent approach.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up this morning on the Morning Meeting, we're going to have our dessert first. Certain requirements and preset schedules have our usually back half of the show on the front half. Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, is with us this morning, waking up early to do so. Ben, good morning.
I've been drinking for 2 hours, so I don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to start self-medicating. I mean, this is Tuesday, isn't it? Sun came up, didn't it?
It already is, and, well, that's my, like, health break. It's my Michelle Obama-approved health break. The label isn't exactly what it's all about. In fact, it has no relation to science, as we discovered yesterday. But, you know, between 8:05 and 9:57 every Tuesday morning, that's my Michelle Obama-approved break.
It is vegetables. It's made from grains. So as far as I'm concerned, whiskey is a salad.
We have to reorganize that government food pyramid.
We're going to do it with emojis.
Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, with us this morning on the Morning Meeting. The Independent Maps group just got a little bit of a win from the commission that looks at the correct signatures and so forth. I believe that's handled by Board of Elections. Now there is going to be a huge fight, it seems, between this, quote, independent group that wants independent maps. And when you say maps in politics, you're talking about the lines of districts and those representatives and those who obviously have some skin in the game, which is why we have the gerrymandered districts that we have now in the state of Illinois. Ben, to me, this is just one more issue where it comes down to who has ultimate control. Should we have some common sense in place here, or are we just going to let the vested political interests keep drawing out what's best for them?
Yeah, this is the living, breathing example of the fight in Illinois isn't Republican-Democrat. It's not even really conservative-liberal. The fight is big government, the status quo, the people in office, versus the taxpayers. And when it comes down to who should pick voters, either the voters should pick their representatives or representatives should be allowed to pick their voters. Right now in Illinois, the politicians draw the map. And you want to know why so many of these races for state house are unopposed? It's because they've been drawn into unlosable districts. I mean, it is quite literally you have to be caught murdering someone and then really not even have a good excuse, like he walked into the bullets, in order to not be elected to the General Assembly if you are an incumbent. The map is the one reform. I'm agnostic at best on term limits. I really am because I don't like the idea that it takes away choices from voters. I always trust voters. But the map is one reform that I think everybody can get behind because it puts the faith in voters, and it takes away the power. This is why Mike Madigan in 2010 kept quiet about Rod Blagojevich because he wanted a Democratic governor so he didn't have to compromise on the map. And listen, Republicans would do the same thing in a heartbeat. They would draw a Republican map that would carve the state up to their advantage. It is time that we stop allowing politicians to to pick their voters. But you're right, the next fight is a lawsuit by the people who draw the map. They don't want to give up this power. It is an all-or-nothing power, and they don't want to give it up. And they're not going to give it up. It has to be taken from them. Again, the people in Springfield aren't going to miracle their way to small government. We are going to have to force it upon them. And this map, the map, remap, is the way to do it.
Ben Yon, our guest this morning on The Morning Meeting. Okay, Ben, do they see the writing on the wall? And I say they, I mean Springfield. See the writing on the wall as far as the district lines. Is that why then we have something like automatic voter registration that immediately puts everybody into the soup with no bar of achievement or any type of, want to be involved so that then they can be applied to getting those votes as opposed to having the district drawn the way they want?
Anytime Democrats do anything, whether it's in Springfield or in Washington, D.C., whenever they do anything about labor markets, it's always designed to benefit unions. The reason we're going to have these overtime rules is designed to get more people to be in a union. Anytime Democrats do anything with elections or ID or voter registration, it is all designed to get more voters, to make sure that there are as many people possible who can cast a ballot, whether by legitimate reasons of, hey, let's make sure everybody who can cast a ballot can. And I think everyone wants to make sure that if you can vote, please do vote. You should. Our government is better when people participate. But there is always this nagging sense of Democrats in the state of Illinois want to continue to grow the sphere of people who will vote for them. Again, they're not winning the argument. They're not going out and saying, hey, you know what's going to make the state better? If you give more of your money to Springfield. Hey, you know what's going to make the state better? If we take more of your money and give it to these union members and put a brick on any job creation. Hey, you know, we've been doing such a great job for the past 12 years. Continue to let us to drive this state down this path. We're doing awesome. They can't go win on the ideas, so they have to expand the universe. They have to find new Democratic voters because they're not getting people to come back and vote again. And there is any time you see a Democratic proposal to do something with voters in Springfield, you should instantly be skeptical that the end goal is to have more people vote. Look at the problems we had this past election because of same-day voter registration. No problems until this one, Bernie's on the ballot, and every college kid for five counties decides today they're going to go vote, and look at all the problems we had. I mean, for God's sakes, Adams County couldn't even finish voting. There were a lack of ballot. Mm-hmm. This is why you should have a healthy dose of skepticism and question the motives anytime Democrats decide that they want to start doing things with elections.
The automatic voter registration proposal says that state officials won't be sending information, because it's essentially an information sharing proposal. They won't be sharing information involving temporary state driver's license. Those are the ones issued to illegal immigrants that happen to live in the state. Do you actually believe that? Am I too cynical about that?
We were told when Obamacare was launched that there's no way that you would ever have anyone who's not in this state or in this country legally on the Medicaid rolls. And review after review, audit after audit, shows that no, in fact, they signed up thousands of people who didn't qualify for the program. Now, at some point along the line, they may have been caught. But when you don't have voter ID, if you end up on the voting list, you're on the voting list. When you have same-day registration and you can just show up and say, well, I renewed my driver's license and I guess I'm registered to vote up in Skokie, I'd like to vote here, all of a sudden you now have tenfold problems for local election authorities. And don't forget, that's who runs these things. This is the county clerk is the one who has to administer this. And go ask any county clerk in the state how well they think that the last unfunded mandates, really good ideas from the General Assembly about voting. Go ask them how well they worked out. And they will all tell you that it was a nightmare. And it is going to cause a problem, sure, once in every other presidential race. But when it causes problems, it causes problems. And not just for the people who, well, we don't really know where you are on the voting list. It causes problems for everybody. There were thousands of people, hundreds of people who didn't get to cast a ballot in Quincy because they ran out of ballots because somebody just decided that today was the day they were going to show up and participate. Listen, I want voters who can vote to show up. But when you start opening up the doors and windows and say, anybody inside the house can vote, we're not checking. We just, if you're here in line at 7, and that's the problem with this. And again, you know, I don't know that the problem is we don't have the potential for enough people to vote. We don't have enough people who do vote, but that's a whole other issue, and you're not going to fix that by changing where my information comes and goes.
Ben Yao, Illinois Watchdog, with us this morning on the morning meeting. Ben, as I check the watch, we are 7 days away from the end of session in Springfield. No hope that any budget deal gets done before that. After that, it takes additional votes because you're beyond the preordained end of the session. So we're going into August, it looks like, without certifiable school funding. And now things, as we've said on this show many times, they're about to get real, real.
Most of the schools that I have heard from say they can open in August. That I don't know of any school right now that is seriously talking about not coming back from spring break. The line that I hear is, yeah, we'll be able to open, but how far we get? I think a lot of schools are taking a look at January. Again, I think that the local superintendents aren't dumb. They know that this is all dependent on the November election. And they are doing their best. I'm sure that they've been given guidance from many of the various groups that represent them in Springfield. Hey, just get to January, then we can figure this out. There's a lot of talk here at the Capitol. This is what this last week is. It is, well, maybe, okay, possibly, if we do this, then will you do that? In the end, it comes down to Republicans who took to the governor's office yesterday, the legislative leaders, and said, nope, no tax increase until you give us business reforms. Mm-hmm. Now, there could be some movement on workers' comp. There could be some movement on a few other issues. How much do we need so that both sides can declare victory? And like we said last week, we are still living in the political reality between the Speaker of the House and the governor of the state of Illinois that it's not important for me to win. It's far more important for me to see you to lose. And that's a dangerous game of chicken because you're right. We are walking down the last plank here. There will be no Illinois left come January if there isn't movement. Are you willing to stake the fate of the state on the idea that once the election is done then? Because don't forget, a year ago we were saying, yeah, we'll probably get something, and if not July 15th, then we're looking at the fair. If not the fair, then at first school aid payment in August. And all of a sudden, here we are in May, almost 11 months later, almost 12 months later, and we still don't have a state budget. I don't know why all of a sudden everyone seems to just assume that once the election is over, okay, everybody goes back to where it is. That's the most likely cause or path. But even then, I don't know that we can assume that we are going to save schools and social services in November this time, because we really think it's going to happen this time.
Ben Yao, Illinois Watchdog, with us this morning on the morning meeting.
All right, Ben, Senate Bill 2994, that's the John Cullerton and McSweeney bill, where they want to streamline and reduce units of local government within individual counties. Passed the House unanimously, 112 to nothing. Governor going to sign this? Is this election year love-in legislation?
Listen, I don't care how it happens. It needs to happen. Illinois has the most units of local government, either total or per capita. I think Texas has more, but I think Texas is actually a bigger state. Per capita, we have more units of government. We have almost 8,000. For God's sakes, we have 800 different school districts, 100 counties, 102 counties, but we don't have any, 102 counties, but we have 800 school districts. Sorry, as my alarm goes off. This is needed. And so whether this is election year, we got to make sure we pretend like we're actually reforming, or this is reform, I don't care. Let's take it. Let's do it. But it's not just getting rid of some of these do-nothing or do-little units of government. the next step is to actually shrink the size of government that, that exists. Again, I ask the question, why are city workers in Quincy picking up garbage? The garbage needs to be picked up, but does it need to be picked up by city workers?
Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, with us this morning here on the morning meeting. But you're eyeballing him like through the microphone as you drink your Snapple.
What's... What? No, that's fine.
I thought you had something else you were going to follow him up with there.
No. No,
okay,
those are
it.
The things I would, yeah, voter registration, $29.94.
Okay, so you know, Quaid has this habit when he's about to ask a question, the eyebrow goes up, and the eyebrow was up while he was drinking his Snapple, so I was thoroughly confused.
Not the first time.
That's how you end up on a very confused end of the show like this. Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, with us this morning on the morning meeting. Ben, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate
thanks,
it,
Ben.
Bud.
Have fun, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Coming up this morning on the morning meeting, it is over. We'll tell you why coming up on the morning meeting.
Where we go, others will follow.
That's who we are.
Even if it's not the best idea. The morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
This is Mark Levin, and you're listening to the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
I just thought you might chime in with the sports betting, because casinos are now trying to insert themselves into that.
Sure, that's
that revenue
the way
stream.
That's the way that the state has legitimized, in air quotes, gambling in the state of Illinois, giving them by legislation control over that. I think is trying to forcibly regulate too much of what we can choose to do as adults, quite simply. I mean, we have OTBs, yes,
mm-hmm.
off-track betting.
Mm-hmm.
Daily sports fantasy on your phone is essentially you're your own OTB.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't have to go to a casino for all those things.
Yeah.
I mean, I love going to casinos. Don't get me wrong.
But if the
I've yet to be banned for counting cards and blackjack.
If the 3 points for full disclosure. if the casino's involved, though, they're going to want to cut.
Well, absolutely.
And that's really what this is
absolutely.
About.
At that point, the casino becomes the mall operator, and the daily sports fantasy sites are just having a kiosk in
mm-hmm.
their mall. And yeah, they're going to take a cut of that.
Mm-hmm.
So as would I if I was the building that they had to operate out of. You have to have some rent, lease, you know, profit share, something.
But the sports, but they don't need the casino.
No, they don't. The genius of what they've done is that they've taken it and made it as low a possible overhead by keeping it essentially all digital, right? You get the
mm-hmm.
app for free and that kind of thing. So, you know, they do make their money, but they've made this easy to use, easily accessible, low overhead. I mean, it's all the things that you would look at in business school and go, how can we get our product in the most people's hands? I mean, they've pretty much checked every box I can think of.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see how the Illinois legislature handles that issue as well. It's been contentious. This is one issue where they should just, in my mind, stay out of it.
Yeah, insert government to make things more difficult.
Right.
Check.
Oh, that's a box they're often checking off. So this is it. It's official, Quaid.
It's over?
It's over. Competition, manliness, womanliness. Striving, the urge to achieve, the urge to be recognized, all these things are now part of a bygone era. First, they came for your sports achievements, and they told you, no, you can't be recognized for being better than Johnny, little Nicky, because you ran faster, or you hit the ball further, or you were able to score from second when he couldn't. No, we're just going to give everybody the same medal so no one can feel like they've achieved anything. The last bastion of competitive achievement was believed to be academics, where you could study hard. You could show and take the test and prove that you knew more. You studied better. You paid attention in class. And you reflected that in your GPA. And at the end of it, the very best strive to become valedictorian or salutatorian. That is now too onerous. This, according to a new policy in North Carolina, where they say the competition created to become valedictorian runs counter to the field of academic endeavors in which we should choose to share our knowledge with all, and they have now banned their school district from recognizing valedictorians.
Okay, isn't it then just a slide step away from recognizing grades?
I'm glad you brought that up. Grades are too subjective to use them to declare a winner, Quaid.
Okay,
that's
so
according to this research, the Wake County Board of Education in North Carolina. This, you went right to the heart of the issue, in my mind. You have either one, foreseeing the future of this conversation
20 seconds
from now.
My brain is sexy.
Or two, you have an implicit understanding of this as a father of two young boys. I'm not sure which it is.
All
I say young
above.
Relatively to my age,
sure,
is what I'm driving at there. Essentially, what they have found is that, let me see the exact quote here, because it is so maddening that it literally had me just pulling out my hair. Let's see, the grades are too subjective. When you have an objective competition, there are ways to measure people to come up with an objective winner, i.e. sports. You scored more points, you ran the 200-yard dash faster, you threw the javelin further. These are all immutable and objective, so we could declare a winner. However, you've got the subjectivity of grades being the determinant when arriving at a valedictorian. Since when are grades subjective? You got the question right, or you got the question wrong?
See, this, but that's where you're going to.
That's why there is no such thing as new math. Math is the one immutable language of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there is no new math. Math is a constant. Our understanding of it may change as we advance into the deeper mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
But math is math, and it is the one universal language of all species, of all races, of all kind in the universe. There is no other answer.
All right, Josh.
To be fair, this is the same
Are you a
place.
New math kid?
No, just to be fair, this is the same place that can't figure out the bathrooms right now. So needless to say, I'm just
no, they figured
Producer
out the bathrooms. The government,
they figured out, like,
the feds want them to understand the bathroom.
Yeah, that's you know, they're,
I'm
they're
just saying.
Yeah, they have the issue. They're North Carolina, what Josh is pointing out, they have, it's their legislature that passed the law that said you have to use the, in public schools and in public access government buildings, you have to use the bathroom of the gender identified on your birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
So the feds are then countersuing them to say, no, people should be free to use whatever bathroom they feel like they should be associated with.
But,
and North Carolina's calling BS.
What you're driving at, though, is
the wussification of America.
I want to say the wussification, but I want to go deeper than that. The deeper basic truths of, you mentioned the universe, or of at least this world.
Let's get deep.
All right. So what you're talking about is no more.
Everybody bring the lights down.
Hang on. No more correct, no more incorrect. There's no more less, there's no more more. There's no more right, there's no more wrong. There's no more individual, there's no more achievement. And ultimately what you get to is no more I think, therefore I am. It's the undoing
cogito ergo sum
of the person.
Yes.
And is the undoing, essentially, at some point in time, the undoing of reality.
Resistance is futile, Quinn.
I'm just saying, it's a deeper thing that they're scratching at, and I think striving for, whether they understand it or not, and I think at some level somebody understands it.
Well, you're attacking individualism, is what you're doing.
And that's what this country is.
Right. You're no longer recognizing the value of an individual, the value of that individual's achievements, and what that individual can achieve for themselves. This is a way of stomping on libertarianism, conservatism, anything other than big government collectives. And once again, where do we see it starting? We see it starting in the indoctrination system that liberals have used for decades in this country in the school system. They're teaching kids that, you know what, you can't be recognized for achievement. We want you What was the direct quote? We want you to share your academic knowledge with everyone. Diffuse that knowledge. Knowledge is great, and knowledge is not the property of any one individual, government, country, whatever you want to say. Knowledge is universal.
Can you
go
not
out and get it? But you have to go out and get it. You have to achieve. You have to put in the time. You can then show off what you've learned.
Right.
Intelligence is the new rock and roll. That's been used as a great byline for one company's ads. And I think it drives at the heart of where we're at right now. If you can leverage technology and intelligence and those things, that's what we currently are kind of in awe of and using more of. So this is just a step backwards right here to tell people, you know what, your individual achievements account for nothing.
It is an undoing. Can you not share your knowledge now? You most certainly can share your knowledge now. Mm-hmm. Students share knowledge with each other. They help each other study. Now, that doesn't mean that a person you're trying to help, that a person you're trying to tutor, that a person you're trying to share your knowledge with is going to understand it at the level that you understand it at. You can't make that happen. That is on them, either whether they have the desire to understand it or the ability to understand it. We're not all the same, and there's only one reason to undo, and that is to tear down and then remake as something else. And that's the part that we need to be aware of.
You want to check out the article for yourself? Not very long. It was posted yesterday. A reporter named Madison Margolin did it for the Christian Science Monitor. You can check it out. It's up at ChristianScienceMonitor.com. No more valedictorians, because even competition when it comes to education has to be stamped out from students experiencing the rush of achievement over a hard-earned career.
Then no more actually passing any tests. Put away your SAT. Put away your entrance exams. What schools, getting into certain schools, doesn't mean anything anymore.
Well, see, this is where you're going to have the huge disconnect, in my mind, between elite colleges and high schools that have chosen this line. You no longer are getting people ready for elite post-secondary education institutions, and there are still some in this country.
Allow me to further the thoughts. Okay, therefore, when you undo and begin to rebuild, what do? If something still has to be elite on some level, what makes it elite? What makes the people who go there elite? It's not anything that you've done on a personal level. That's decided then by others. This is the class system that complained about.
Well, and the other thing this is, too, is this takes away individual recognition, which, as you mentioned, gives more power to others. It's the academia mafia who are running education for their own enrichment instead of the enrichment of others. And so they just get to become an even sterner gatekeeper at that point.
Yeah. I like your family. I like you individually. They can do something for me. That's all about remaking a system that is not based on merit, and that's dangerous. That's something we should be aware of and
I keep arguing that we run toward the meritocracy, and every time we turn around, we're running away from the meritocracy because we have fewer people who want to actually take responsibility for themselves. And even those young kids who do want it, now the adults are saying, no, you can't. And so you're creating generations of dependents, whether they're financially dependent, whether they're intellectually dependent. You're going to create generations of dependency, and that is not going to bring this country the level of excellence that we have expected from it. All right, coming up this morning on the morning meeting, good news, Illinois. Somebody's trying to be worse than you. We'll figure out who's racing toward the bottom next on the morning meeting.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD.
But if we do that, the heritage framework of the game is suddenly meaningless, Quade.
Old math, new math.
What does it mean anyway?
Oh, my gosh.
It's the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930.
What about pitch
WCAD?
Count? We talk about innings.
I hate pitch
we
count.
We talk about
I
outs.
Don't like, I'm not going to the Dusty Baker School of Rune and Arms, but I don't like pitch counts. We got into a conversation during the break on what constitutes a quality start, because our traffic director was saying Adam Wainwright was credited with a quality start in last night's Cubs Cardinal game, and you correctly, I think, pointed out he's been credited with too many quality starts for a guy who hasn't been quality for most of the year this year. I believe the line right now is 6 innings, 4 earned runs or less, which doesn't sound very high quality to me. I've always argued for 7 innings, 3 earned or less.
And I was
making
the case
that maybe I'm too much of an authoritarian a-hole for
that. Does it have to be full innings? Why not just outs? I mean, really, aren't outs what we're looking for? If a starting pitcher gets you 20 outs, don't you consider that quality?
So that's 6 2/3, which the normal unit of measurement in baseball is the inning.
Right.
Which do you then eschew something that has worked?
I'm not saying undo the innings, but I'm saying if now you're assigning merit to an inning as opposed to the out.
Because now you can get in and break it down by out percentage and go 6 2/3 and then base your ERA off of that.
Right. When you just throw the word quality around, is that only applicable to innings or is it applicable to outs? And that's what when we came on, we were devolving it down into pitch count.
I like to follow the Supreme Court's definition of pornography.
It when you see it.
Yes, for quality pitching. I know it when I see it. And last night, I would actually say Lester was better than Wainwright for the majority of the game last
night. Yes, sir. I would agree.
Or not Lester.
Lackey.
Lackey. Lackey was better than Wainwright for the majority of that game
last night. Well, and the
which I will admit, I didn't watch every pitch of as I usually do. Because, once again,
the strike zone was an amoeba.
They started the Blues game exactly opposite
of that
Cardinal game. And, yes, the strike zone was an atrocity last night. That strike zone has...
And that plays
into... That strike
into...
zone was redefined more times than voter districts in the state of Illinois under gerrymandering.
Therefore, if the strike zone is moving around, that affects your pitch count, it affects your outs,
The kind of ball you have to throw to get the strike, which narrower strike zones always favor hitters because you have to come over the plate more, and it has a ripple effect, I believe, is what you're getting to on that front. All right, that'll be the side session today for the morning meeting. What constitutes a quality start?
We challenge Steve Luton to pick it up and run with it Saturday morning.
Yes, Saturday morning on the McDonald's Saturday morning ticket right here on WTAD. There is a state that has decided, Illinois, we're tired of you getting all the acclaim for being the worst state to do business in the country.
Rock and roll.
We're coming for your title. Such that it is.
Wait a minute. Let me mark down the contenders here.
You go for it. Go through it. I'll give you a list of 5 to make out.
Wow.
Contenders that could be getting after Illinois' worst in the nation status for businesses.
Ooh.
And ergo, for those who live within its boundaries. Because what kind of businesses you have and what they can afford to pay then affects things like average income, goods and services you can afford. Speaking of ripple effects, that's a huge one. And also, you have to keep in mind how big of a bite of an apple does government think that it's entitled to?
Because
that's the big problem in Illinois. They keep wanting to take more bites at your financial apple, saying that, well, that's the state's money. You're lucky we let you keep what we do already.
Okay, I've got 3.
All right, go for it.
California.
Ain't.
New Jersey.
Ain't.
New York.
Ain't.
Really?
Oregon wants to throw down and take over worst state in the country. A massive $2.8 billion annual corporate tax is heading to the ballot for voters in Oregon in November. The legislature in Oregon has approved this. It would create the most aggressive tax climate for business in any state in the nation. Stand down, Illinois. Stand down. Somebody wants to do it worse than you.
We need to cut a PSA and send it. We, the people of Illinois,
don't look
implore
like us.
You, Oregon.
Yeah, don't look. You don't want to be us. that's like the billboard I heard about yesterday that's getting some furrowed brows and raised eyebrows in Toronto. It's a billboard encouraging people to text and drive, and it was sponsored by a funeral home.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I figured if people are smart enough to figure out that that's satire, then you didn't need the reminder anyway. And people who don't understand it are going to be like, okay.
I don't think this Oregon legislation is satire, though.
No, people of Oregon are not that lucky. The proposal's labor union backers are one step away from getting the measure on the ballot. They've submitted the signatures. The Oregon Board of Elections is going to approve them, and then this is going to be on the ballot. The state itself says this is, in the long term, in 5 years, a horrible idea, but in the short term, could balance the state budget. That could is if people don't flee for the borders the minute that the ballot passes in November.
The acknowledgement that this is bad on some level shows that you don't want to play with it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because to say we know that this will be bad in the long run, but we might be able to bridge the gap now means that what are you bridging the gap to? You're bridging the gap to bad.
Oregon is one of 5 states with no sales tax. But what it does in lieu of that is it taxes its corporations that are headquartered there based on income. So you don't pay sales tax, but the corporations, the businesses in your state, pay taxes based on their income level. This proposal maintains that income tax, but adds an additional layer of what's called a gross receipts tax. Okay, essentially, think of it as sales tax that's gotten all Sammy Sosa'd up on steroids, Barry Bonds'd up on steroids, and just gone crazy. Okay, I'll throw Mark McGwire in there, too, even though we don't know for sure. Those were just Flintstones. What it does is it taxes each level of production rather than when you actually sell something. So each time a product is made or moved, tax. That's before you then sell it to the consumer. All that's going to do is raise the final price, purchase point price for the consumer.
Oh, out of
control. And by a lot. By a lot. They are targeting a certain cap level, income cap level for businesses. About 1,000 businesses in Oregon would fall underneath this. That's about 4% of all their businesses there. They would then be paying a minimum $30,000 tax plus 2.5% on everything above that threshold. That would bring in for the state about $6 billion a year in revenue. Here's the findings from the state. This is very interesting. State analysis found that if the proposal passes, consumer prices will rise, the state population will decline, 38,000 private sector jobs will be lost over the next 4 to 5 years, but 18,000 public sector jobs have to be added.
You're right. They're like, let's follow the Illinois plan to screwing ourselves up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. This is according to reports that I've seen from there, you've got the battle line drawn in bright pink highlighter. You got unions on one side because they're going to get the state jobs, those 18,000 state jobs, and you've got private business on the other side knowing that they're going to lose their backside over this, and it's been described as everyone has taken an accurate accounting of their war chest, and they're all willing to empty it all to make sure that this does or does not happen. So this is going to be very interesting, and one thing that even though we're quite a distance away from Oregon, that I'm going to be keeping my eye on as this comes down to the wire.
When the session's over next week, if Speaker Madigan goes to Oregon.
I didn't even think about that. Oh, that's
dear Oregon, don't do it.
Don't do it.
Take a look around. Come to Illinois and watch the dysfunction. Don't do it.
Coming up this morning on the morning meeting, who just said no and why it was a predictable but most likely bad idea, and who's going to be back in the Gem City? We'll talk about that all coming up next on the morning meeting.
Where we go, others will follow.
That's who we are.
Even if it's not the best idea.
The morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
Hi, it's Glenn Beck, and you're listening to The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
You and I should go together.
Where?
To the farmer's market, just as we
here
were
in
talking
town?
About. We could do that. Or
we go to the big one in Kirkwood.
Or we could send the gentleman who is the result of us activating our Wonder Twin powers.
Hmm?
You've seen the picture, have you not? I showed this off to a couple people who know us yesterday, and they were... Absolutely.
Oh.
Crack it up.
Are you talking about the guy at Bush
yes.
Stadium who is
yes.
The,
yes.
The sum of the two
Looks
of
like
us?
If you put the two of us together, who you said we need to test his DNA.
Have you seen this picture, Josh?
Oh, it's hilarious.
Here you go,
pass
Josh.
That around to him.
Here you go.
So we suspected this may happen, and it was made official
that
yesterday.
That is one handsome gentleman.
He is. I thought I'd had all my doppelgangers eliminated, but... apparently he escaped my notice since he's half Quaid DNA. I'll have to ask you first. We need to post that
what,
on the
St.
website.
Louis Dr. Moreau is involved here.
Hillary Clinton has said no to the invitation to have a debate with Bernie Sanders on the Fox network. Sanders went all in, absolutely yes, let's do it. We'll have it in California. We'll be there. The Clinton camp, after, according to reports, conferring with DNC leadership, read Debbie Wasserman Schultz, declined that invitation from Fox. Sanders has correctly jumped on this as a quote statement that the election system in his party is rigged and that the common man does not have a say.
See,
and how else are you going to interpret that? That's Clinton saying, I don't want to be bothered talking to the unwashed masses. Just this is supposed to be over. Damn it, let it be over. And let me move on. And now Sanders came back and said, well, if you won't talk to us there, you're going to talk to us at the convention, and we might make it messy.
She was on the other foot 8 years ago when Clinton kept wanting to debate. And Barack Obama at the time didn't want to. He was out in front. She was trailing. She was wanting to give herself opportunities to show a difference and to gain some ground. And the debate is a quick way to do that. Right now, I put Bernie in that Clubber Lang situation. Not that Hillary's the champ, but within the Democrat Party, she kind of is.
Mm-hmm.
So she's rocky. I think Bernie's going to have to show up and essentially, like, live... show up at one of her events and call out her manhood or something like that.
And just challenge it and just start debating her right there.
Yeah.
By the way, the Romanian hacker Marcel Lazar, the guy who says he was the one who hacked into Clinton's server, he's going to be finalizing his plea deal tomorrow, reportedly, with the feds. So this may have some legs as to where this goes and whether or not they might be yanking her off the campaign trail.
I'll be surprised.
All right, we'll see where that goes. I think that they should have the debate. I think she's a little bit scared because, agree or disagree with Bernie, he knows what his politics and policies are. Hers are the politics of convenience. Guess who's coming back to the Gem City at
Who?
Least once a year?
Who?
Sean Taylor.
Oh, really?
Old Coach Taylor, he was just landed the Moline head coaching job, so he's back in the Western Big Six.
Fascinating.
Fired after 11 seasons at Quincy. We'll see if the Blue Devils come to regret that move as Coach Taylor now in Moline. Going to make for a very interesting basketball season.
Should be fun.
This year. That's going to do it for us. More Morning Meeting coming up tomorrow right here on WTAD.
Join us again tomorrow for the best talk in the tri-states. The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.